As I have talked about this session, as two or three have mentioned it, I've referred to it as the unspiritual part of the conference here, and perhaps it's well placed right after Chorale night, so we can kind of gear back into the spiritual part of it easily. But I do always look around for a verse of Scripture as a point of reference for anything we study about. I remember when it was decided on quite short notice that my fiancée and I were going to announce our engagement some 20 years ago. So I cast around real quickly for a verse, and I found one that fit the situation. And so as this occasion got underway, I read from Job 3:25, "For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me." And the last part of that phrase, just the verse repeats the same thing, "And that which I was afraid of is come unto me." Now I suppose a verse that might fit in as a background to this would be 2 Corinthians 12:10, as Paul said, "Therefore, I take pleasure in," and he mentioned several things. Then down the line, he said, "in necessities." So we'll try to take a little pleasure in one of the necessities, and that is trying to improve the way that we get our work done. Now, of course, I'm sure you've already kind of gotten the idea that what we're advocating in this conference is something that will take a great deal more time in your schedule. And you don't have any extra time in your schedule to spare. We think what we're talking about in following up individuals, spending time with men, is very, very important. So we're taking this session to try to stimulate you to do some new research into how to get more out of the time that you have available right now. I believe the remark has already been made here that we all have the same amount of time. The President of the United States doesn't have any more hours in his day than we do. I happened to be back in Washington in January. I was staying overnight the night before he was to deliver his State of the Union message. And I got in touch with my congressman. I had never asked him for anything in my life, but I told him I'd like to have a ticket. Well, he checked up to see how many votes that we had out here at Glen Eyrie. And at least I presume that's what he was checking on. He had his wife's ticket, who hadn't come to Washington yet. And I guess nobody having asked for it, that it was associated with any more votes than we were out here. And he gave me the ticket. So I had the opportunity to sit in the gallery as President Kennedy delivered his State of the Union message. And he was very relaxed about it, very happy about it. And I thought again that the only reason that he can get more done in 24 hours than I can, for two reasons. He is better organized, and he has more help. So he gets a great deal more done than I do. Now, before I get into two or three things that I trust will be practical, I'd like to recommend two books. And we have a whole library on these subjects. And out of this library, these two are the ones that we recommend the most highly as being of immediate practical help. These books are expensive. We don't sell them here. The first one is called All the Time You Need. And it has many practical hints on how to make use of time. After the meeting's over here, Pete, I'm going to hand these to you and ask you to write these titles and the publishing and so forth on the board here so they can get them, because I'm going to be looking into these as we go on here. All the time you need. Is that your experience? All the time you need. Now the other one is called Successful Executive Action. And I'll read just a few chapter titles in this. The first one, How to Get Action. The second one, Delegate by the Results You Expect. Three, How to Apply the Rule of Errors. Control, the right arm of the executive. How to apply controls. How committees can stymie you. That sound like an interesting chapter? Then there's some sub-headings under here. The first one is, Why Have Committees? The next one is, Four Errors of Committees. Three Causes of Failure of Committee Operation. And then the last subheading, How to Get Committees to Action. And then the next major heading, How to Get Results from Committees. The second part of the book deals with getting results from people. Seven techniques that get results from people. How to get the most out of your staff people. How to make your men accountable. Rely on your men to do their jobs. Your key men need supervision too. 10 effective techniques. The third part of the book deals with getting results from yourself as leader. First chapter, spurring men to their peak. Keep your purpose. Keep your balance. Place emphasis where it belongs. The key executive rule, discipline yourself. Next chapter, never let well enough alone. And in the final chapter here, as Glenn Anderson was looking into this, he said he wondered if the Navigators contributed a chapter to this book, and we didn't. We've learned a lot from it. The last chapter, Building Men, the Key to Results. So we'll write the names of these books, and this one right here, I hope you have a good public library in your hometown. Otherwise, you'll need the church to put it in the budget a year ahead of time. It's a very expensive book, but a very valuable one. One definition of leadership is accomplishing your objectives through the efforts of others. There are many, many definitions of leadership, but this is one and a good one. The Lord has given you great objectives and important objectives. I doubt if any here are satisfied that they're being carried out in the degree that you would like. Well, leadership is accomplishing these objectives through the efforts of others. The official Air Force publication speaking on this subject asks the question, what are the results of effective leadership? And they say that it is the effective use of all available resources in achieving your objective. All available resources, others, and these things. Now, of course, the main resource that God has given is men, isn't it? Accomplishing your objectives through others. I was thinking again of Acts 6:4, when they had this administrative problem. You recall, the disciples were being shoved aside from their main job of giving themselves to the word and prayer. But these other things had to be done. So, in Acts 6:3, the order is given, Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among you, seven men. This is the answer. Don't want to be shunted aside Seven men. Men are the answer. And then I was thinking again, over in 1 Chronicles 11:10. I like to read this real frequently, and I hope you do too. Having reviewed again the great successes of David militarily, in 1 Chronicles 11, beginning with verse 10, it says, "These also are the chief of the mighty men whom David had, who strengthened themselves with him and in his kingdom to make him king, according to the word of God concerning Israel." These are the men. These are the mighty men that were the nucleus of all the great army that is enumerated chapters later. And then 2 Samuel chapter 25 gives their names and their achievements and says there were 37 in all, but these were the only ones out of the several hundred thousand that were singled out. His resources were a band of 37 mighty men, and it's real challenging to read the exploits of these mighty men that worked with him. D.E. Host, who took over the position of head of the China Inland Mission after Hudson Taylor, in his writings that are accumulated, some of them called the Insight of a Seer, the best quotations from his life, talks about this matter of leadership. He says, "What is the essential difference between false and true Christian leadership? When a man, in virtue of an official position in the church, demands the obedience of another, irrespective of the latter's reason and conscience, this is conscience, this is the spirit of tyranny. When, on the other hand, by the exercise of tact and sympathy, by prayer, spiritual power, and sound wisdom, one Christian worker is able to influence and enlighten another, so that the latter, through the medium of his own reason and conscience, is led to alter one course and adopt another. This is true spiritual leadership." So, it is possible to accomplish the objectives God has given you through the efforts of others, and to get them to respond and to cooperate and to be your mighty men, extra hands and feet, I believe. Well, with that, those preliminary remarks, I'd like to talk about just four key words in organization. And we don't know very much about this. I don't even know whether our motivation is right or not. But I've always tried to keep myself in a place where that I won't be snowed under and will not become the victim of someone else's priorities. I think where I learned this lesson the most effectively was when I was a captain of a naval ship during the Korean War. And when we're out on operations, we have what we call a tactical circuit with a tactical commander, and he's the one that tells us what to do and when to do it. And I find out that any time he speaks over this radio circuit and calls and called my ship, he wanted me to answer. Not the executive officer, the officer of the deck, or anybody else. The minute he called, I was supposed to answer. Well, suppose this was in the midst of a battle, and we had been hit, and we had a fire back there. So the tactical commander would call up, and somebody else would answer. "Where's the captain?" "Well, he's back, checking on the fire back there." Well, that didn't happen to me, but I know what would have been the result if it had. He would have had a little talk with me. He said, "Anytime I call, I want your ear. But, Admiral, there's a fire. You train the people to put out the fire. But we're flooding. You train the people, take care of the flooding, so they can do it just as well as you can. I want your ear when I call." In our spiritual objectives, we need to be in a place where that God has our ear and we're not involved in things that would distract us from giving our ear to Him. And this involves training others so they can do as good or a better job in this situation as we would if we were there. Well, the four words that I want to talk about are organize, deputize, supervise, and control. It's been said on this heading of organize that an organization is required when two or more people are engaged in a common effort. This may be a formal or informal, official or unofficial, but organization is required when two or more people are involved in a common effort. It's been said that there's no such thing as a big job, because any job that exists can be subdivided into smaller jobs. So there's no such thing as a big job that has to remain a big job. So the first step in organization is to divide the job into smaller jobs. The second step, I believe, is to define the duties required to accomplish these jobs. The third requirement is to assign men to these jobs, paying particular attention to what management experts call the span of control. Whenever you find an ineffective organization, I would say that 9 times out of 10, you can trace the reason for it being ineffective to this one concept in management and organization, which is called the span of control. And I'm going to try to describe that. I have a reprint here from the Harvard Business Review that I'm going to quote from. It's called "The Manager's Span of Control." The background to the span of control is what is known as the psychological concept of span of attention. Now, this span of attention concept is this. The span of attention limits the number of items that the human brain can keep within its grasp simultaneously. It seems doubtful if any individual can keep track of and understand a large number of group relationships involved with more than 5 subordinates. Now, that's a little complicated. I'll straighten it out here. You're probably aware that there's been a society organized to try to get a federal injunction or something to keep the telephone company from doing away with the prefixes. Are they doing that in your hometown? Instead of having a prefix and 5 numbers, they're making it all numbers? Well, I would say the telephone company's in trouble. Now, they are in trouble because they haven't got enough pronounceable words. That's the reason they're having to do this. But this was a scientific concept that the human brain can only retain 5 unrelated. Names, figures, or things of this sort. This is the span of attention. So if my number is Melrose 26218, I can memorize 26218. But now they changed Melrose to 63, and I can't even remember my own telephone number. I have to stop and figure it out. So I think the telephone company is going to have to greatly increase their information services, because people just can't memorize. This is a scientific concept. The human brain can only retain 5 unrelated items, the span of attention. And you're going to find very few people that can memorize telephone numbers, perhaps their own, but that's about all. Well, coming out of this span of attention, this concept was first stated by a British Army general named General Hamilton. And here's what he said. The average human brain finds its effective scope in handling from 3 to 6 other brains. If a man divides the whole of his work into 2 branches and delegates his responsibility freely to 2 experienced heads of branches, he will not have enough to do. The occasions when they would refer to him would be too few to keep him fully occupied. Then as he goes on, organizations are run by rule then. A rule whereby from 3 to 6 hands are shepherded by 1 head, each head in turn being member of a superior group of from 3 to 6 who are being wheeled into line 1 by 1. Now, this isn't a matter of IQ, as General Hamilton goes on to explain. He says 1 NCO in charge of 3 private soldiers would be too idle, while 1 general in charge of 6 divisional generals would be too busy. You see, it isn't a matter of IQ. It's a matter of span of attention and span of control. Now, when you find inefficiency in an organization, 90% of the time, put the microscope on and this is the trouble. Within your church and Sunday school organization, let me ask you a question. How many people do you have reporting directly to you for decisions and supervision? How many do you have? Well, if you have too many, 2 things happen to your organization. One is, because you're inaccessible to so many people, they will make decisions on their own, not having the information that you have. These will often be poor decisions, and you've got to go back and check up on them. The other thing is, because you're inaccessible, so many people reporting to you, they'll do nothing until they can get a decision from you. And so the organization, the work just grinds to a halt. I think this is true in any kind of an organization. Well, what's the answer to it? Yes? Okay, 2 reasons for inefficiency. That's not the way I had it. I said 2 results of too many people reporting directly to you. The first is that the people reporting to you, not having access, go ahead and make the decisions as to what to do. Now, they don't have the information you have. Therefore, in many cases, these are poor decisions. They weren't based on proper information. So the efficiency of your organization deteriorates. That's not quite a summary, but do I communicate what I'm trying to say? Now, on the other hand, you have people among these 40 that you're trying to directly supervise who can't get to you for a decision, so they'll do nothing. Just wait. And some of them will have a long wait, won't they, before they can find out what you want to do. When General Eisenhower became president, he really revised the government. I think I read that his predecessor had 238 separate agencies and bureaus reporting to him. General Eisenhower, you remember, started creating undersecretaries, assistant secretaries, and all kind of things, all kind of names, and placed every agency which was not prohibited by law from doing so under a cabinet member, to where he dealt primarily with the 12 members of cabinet. Took in all these hundreds of independent agencies. Now, of course, he still had too many reporting to him, didn't he? Well, this is span of attention and span of control. You must accomplish your objectives through the efforts of others. Set up an organization which has a realistic span of control. Over in Exodus 18, you remember after Moses was about to lose the victory, and he kind of complained to the Lord, and he just asked him, he said, I didn't warn these people. How come I'm responsible? How come I got all this grief? So eventually he was given permission to revise his organization. And verse 25 of Exodus 18 says, "And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people." This is the first broad division. Then underneath this setup, he had certain people who were heads over the people, rulers of thousands. And each one under the head of the people had 1,000. Rulers of hundreds. Rulers of 50s. And rulers of 10s. That's the breakdown that's given here in Exodus 18:25. I don't know just what kind of an office holder would be a ruler over 10. But that's the way that he set it up. And so he dealt with the people on the upper level. Well, I know you have an organization. Somebody told me once that any organization will work, and it will get some work done. But it's possible to have an efficient organization. And this, if you agree with this concept, consists of bringing the people you want to directly supervise to the top, and then other people report to them. There's one other part of this we should perhaps comment on. In this concept of span of control, there is a distinction between those who are doing different tasks and the same task. Now, a sales manager can supervise 40 salesmen if they're all doing the same thing. A departmental superintendent can supervise more teachers than 6 if they're all doing about the same thing. But when you get into tasks which are not the same, this human brain just can't shepherd more than 6. And this is the same for a corporal and for a general. The span of attention is the same. Well, we'll get on here. The other key words, and we won't spend much time on them. The next key word is deputize. This means to give the person some authority and the responsibility to go ahead with the job. For a while, I was vice chairman of the church, of which I'm a member. And we used to have special meetings called every once in a while on Sunday night. And so the chairman of the church, not wanting to be embarrassed, would ask me, he said, "What's the special meeting for?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well, I don't either. I guess the pastor does, so when the meeting comes to order, he'll tell us why the special meeting." Chairman and vice chairman of the church didn't know what the special meeting was about. Well, you can imagine that they were a lot of help to him. Don't you think that they really helped the pastor? I suppose they just had a title, but they weren't delegated any authority for carrying on the work of the church. I've been a Sunday school superintendent, and some teacher would be absent. In our church, they'd never think of calling me. They'd call the pastor. "I'm not going to be there. Will you line up a teacher?" So when I'd get to church, I'd find out that pastor said, "Oh, so-and-so is not going to be here, and so-and-so will teach." I said, "Well, thank you very much." Made my job very easy. What kind of help do you have in your church? Have you deputized these people? Delegated anything to them? You know, God might want you to do that if you haven't been doing it. I'm thinking of Numbers 27:15, as God was speaking to Moses. And he said, that's verse 20, "And thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him, that all the congregation of Israel may be obedient." And that's exactly what God did. Got ready to bring Joshua into the picture. And Moses thought, "Well, Joshua, what can he do? He can't carry out the work. I've got this responsibility." But God, through Eliezer, said, "You put some of your honor on him. And he'll do a job accountable to me, and I'll anoint him for it." And, of course, this is what happened. So this just isn't a human concept. I think God will give you men. And he wants you to share some of the honor that he's given you with them. He'll anoint them, and they can be of help to you. Well, the third word here is the word supervise. Now, supervise, I like to think, means training or teaching. It isn't a matter of looking over somebody's shoulder and down his throat, but simply a supervisor knows better than the person doing a job how to do it, and he helps him do it more efficiently through checking up and correcting and instructing, helping you do it. And in the book that I have here by Slay, he has something to say on this, which I will just read. The author says, "A while ago I was talking to the president of a corporation which is made up of several divisions. We were discussing the fact that key men often get little supervision, and he told me his own experience. Over a period of time," he said, "I had come to believe that key men needed little supervision. After all, they were my most experienced men. They had been promoted because of long and meritorious service, and we assumed that they knew their business. They had proved over a period of time that they were competent. In addition," he went on, "these key men had more insight than the other men on my staff. My philosophy was to put them on their own. They'd be smart enough to carry on." Then he goes on to say that he found out this was wrong. The president said if there was any one truth that seemed to stand out, it was the basic attitude on the part of an executive. "I found out that I should assume that it is my job to make my men successful. So, I give them the job, I delegate, and then I supervise, and I make them a success in it." Well, the final word here is control. Organize, deputize, supervise, and control. I don't know how many of you have been to sea, but if you've ever been on the bridge of a ship and seen operations carried on, when the captain or the pilot or the conning officer, whoever is directing the ship, wants a change of engine speed, he will perhaps say, all engines ahead 2/3. And immediately the reply comes back, all engines answer ahead 2/3. Any command that's given, all engines answer. And the same is true of the rudder. Right 20 degrees rudder. The helmsman says the rudder answers 20 degrees right. And so the captain sits up there and he knows he's in control. As long as every command he gives, there's an answer. Comes back. Now if the engines don't answer, if the rudder doesn't answer, then he knows he's in trouble. And I know what that is too. But the great majority of the time, come back. Sit up there in control. In your organization, it's possible to have a feedback of reports so that you will know, although many people are involved in carrying out your objectives, it's under control. You haven't lost control. You've got control with the proper organization and feedback of reports. Now, this sometimes may mean making some changes. Now, I don't think it should be this strict, but let me quote from General Bradley's soldier story. He says, from General Marshall, I learned the rudiments of effective command. Throughout the war, I deliberately avoided interfering in a subordinate's duties. When an officer performed as I expected him to, I gave him a free hand. When he hesitated, I tried to help him. And when he failed, I relieved him. General Bradley was in command of all American personnel in Europe under General Eisenhower at the end of World War II. I think he had some 78 divisions over there. But he had control. And this is the way he expressed it. Now, I don't think we can take quite that attitude. But when a situation goes wrong, it just can't be ignored. We've got to have control. In this book, I've already mentioned here that the last chapter is Building Men, the Key to Results. And the summary of this book on successful executive action is, yes, you're an executive. You want to get results. But how do you get results? And the answer is through men. This is your basic job as an executive, to develop your men. Without this, you're a whole organization lags. So the key perhaps to building men spiritually is building some of them administratively, through whom you can accomplish your objectives. One final thing I'd like to express to you gentlemen my sympathy on. In 2 Timothy 2:2, as Paul was writing to Timothy, he says, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit to, now what's the next words? Faithful men. I'm very sympathetic because it is my observation that the very heart of the energy and demands on the times of many of the pastors that I know is with the unfaithful. The unfaithful are the ones in trouble, need the counsel, and they have to be cared for. But in the degree that all of your time is taken up with the unfaithful, who's going to take care of these faithful and build them into spiritual mighty men. So in the realm of training men in administration, perhaps you can train a few that will help you in ministering and looking after the unfaithful, so you can get on with the primary job of passing these things on to the faithful. Let's conclude with a word of prayer. And Hugh Harris, I'm going to ask you to lead us, please.